Now, one of the most talked about issues in this year's midterm election campaigns has been election laws themselves. In Wisconsin, Governor Evers vetoed nearly 20 election-related bills passed by Republicans in the legislature over the last 2 years, covering things like absentee voting, election funding, and more. His challenger, Republican Tim Michaels, vows to revive those bills if he's elected governor. Also up in the air is the fate of the state's bipartisan elections commission. Voting procedures are getting challenged in courts around the country, a potential preview of lawsuits to come after the November elections. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What voting issues do you want to hear candidates talking about? Do you want voting laws in Wisconsin changed in some way? Do you worry about them being too loose or tightening up too much? And how about the impact of false claims about voter fraud and how it's affected our conversations about election laws? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Robert Yablon is an associate professor of law and co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative at the UW Law School. Rob, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you.
So big issues here in Wisconsin, and we're hearing a lot of voting challenges, debate about laws around the country. How did this become such a big issue in 2022?
Well, you know, big picture, the idea that election law itself would be an election issue is not completely unprecedented. I mean, it's been an issue at times throughout our history, whether you're talking about voting rights for women or people of color, if you're talking about redistricting and gerrymandering or campaign finance laws. But these controversies ebb and flow, and it does seem like over the past couple of years, we've been in the midst of a bit of a perfect storm. And a lot of that is an outgrowth of the events of 2020, where you had former President Trump refusing to accept defeat, insisting that the election had been rigged and stolen. And he and his allies are continuing to beat that drum to this day. And when you combine that with the fact that our political system has become as polarized as it's been in generations, and you combine that with the fact that we have states like Wisconsin that are very close. And so there is an incentive to fight about every election rule in an attempt to get any possible edge. You really see, you know, these election law issues coming to the fore.
Now, I mentioned a bunch of bills passed by Republicans in the legislature, vetoed by Governor Evers. A change either in the governor, if Republicans win, or in the legislature, if Republicans pick up a few more seats in each chamber, it's a non-zero possibility they could get a supermajority to override vetoes. So some of those laws probably would come into effect. What do you look at that you see as most significant if that were to happen?
You know, we could potentially put these laws into a couple of categories. Some of them involve the right to vote and the process for casting ballots. And the other is more about the mechanics of administering elections. So in terms of voting rights, there is a likelihood based on some of these bills that have already been introduced and vetoed that you would see some new limits on early and absentee voting. You might also see some increasingly aggressive purges of the voting rolls. And, you know, obviously there's good reason to want to have clean voter rolls, but if you purge too aggressively, it might mean that people who should be entitled to vote are not on the registration lists. So those are some of the changes that we might see in terms of, you know, how people vote. Then, you know, the administrative changes could also be a fairly big deal. You know, right now, elections in Wisconsin are administered by the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is a body that the Republicans created in 2016 during the Walker administration, but they have soured on the Elections Commission since then. And so there is a lot of talk that the Elections Commission could be replaced entirely. You could have, depending on the outcome of the Secretary of State election, the legislature shift power over administering elections to the Secretary of State, or you could have the Elections Commission be overhauled in some way. Right now, it is a bipartisan body with three Democrats and three Republicans. And whatever, however it's changed would likely mean that it becomes a more partisan body, a body that is controlled either by the legislature or by the Republicans in some way who are aligned with the legislature.
Right. Candidate Tim Michaels at one point suggested changing that 3-3, the current makeup, which leads to a lot of deadlocks, Democrats and Republicans, with one representative per congressional district based on partisan control of that congressional district. Because of the way voters cluster in Wisconsin, because of the way the political maps are drawn, that would mean a Republican majority.
That's right. I mean, five of the eight representatives to Congress from Wisconsin right now are Republicans. It's likely to be five or six after this election. You know, in some ways, that proposal actually imports gerrymandering into the process of administering elections, because choices about how we draw those congressional districts are now going to matter for how Wisconsin's elections would be administered as well.
We are talking about voting the way we vote, the way campaigns are managed in Wisconsin, and why those things are at stake in this November's election here in Wisconsin and around the country. You can join in with your thoughts, changes you'd like to see, changes you'd hate to see, questions for our guest, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I think we have so many problems with our elections due to gerrymandering, incumbency, lack of term limits, and a lack of direct democracy. I firmly believe, given the legislatures that we have had for the last decade plus, we need to eliminate the legislature, have a drafting body prepare proposed laws, and simply allow them to go to statewide referendum, single issue, one thing at a time, and have monthly, everybody votes on the 10th on whatever proposal it may be. We don't need to pay these people. They don't represent me, and they don't represent you, and they're just, you know, they're not doing their job.
Tom, thanks for the call. I want to ask you two things about Tom's comments, Rob. First of all, on the practical side of it, we don't even have statewide referenda as some other states to turn to on issues, except for constitutional amendments, a slight asterisk there. This would be a pretty tall order, a big change that Tom is calling for here.
That it would be a huge change. I mean, I don't think that eliminating the legislature is in the cards. I will say the majority of states, 26 of them, do have a referendum and or ballot initiative procedure that gives the people a more direct say over legislation. Wisconsin doesn't have that. The governor called a special session earlier this month, and the idea of that special session was to get the legislature to pass a direct democracy constitutional amendment proposal. That didn't happen. I imagine that this is something that's going to continue to get attention in the coming years. The trick in Wisconsin is that in order to amend the Constitution, that constitutional amendment process needs to begin in the legislature.
And aside from the practicality, what I hear in Tom's argument there is frustration with the legislature. And I think in different partisan quarters, there is a lot of frustration with how our government works.
You know, absolutely. And Tom mentioned gerrymandering in particular, and that has been a persistent issue in Wisconsin for over a decade now. You know, it's a reason why, even though our statewide elections tend to swing back and forth, the legislature has remained, you know, very firmly in Republican hands. And the median member of the legislature, the things that those legislators are trying to do aren't always representative of what a majority of Wisconsinites would want. So there is, a representational mismatch that happens as a result of that gerrymandering.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Michael now in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Echoing some of the previous caller's sentiments, I wanted to express my frustration in, you know, the suite of various pieces of legislation, predominantly by Republicans across the country, but including in Wisconsin, to restrict voting, whether it's making it harder to vote, requiring IDs to vote, which require people to have transportation and time and et cetera. But in generally just restricting voting, I feel that it's undemocratic. And, like the previous caller said, with gerrymandering, and like the guest was saying, you know, since 2011, despite the fact that a number of elections that are statewide have gone for Democratic candidates, since 2011, Republicans have had a majority block in the legislature. And it's just very frustrating because, like you said, there's not a whole lot we can do about it directly.
Michael, thanks for the call. To Michael's first point, Robert, do we see an impact from some of the measures that Michael is talking about, supported by Republicans, to suppressing votes or creating obstacles for voters?
You know, this is really hard to study empirically because you don't really have controlled experiments that you're able to run for the most part. And so, you know, there have been some political scientists that have tried to pin down exactly what the effect on turnout might be, say, of a voter ID law. And in some cases, they do find at least some evidence of some suppression that's taking place. Even if people are able to get around some of these obstacles, the fact that they have to invest the time and resources to do it, you might say, is itself a problem, that people shouldn't have to jump through those hoops. And, you know, what you're really seeing around the country is a little bit of a bifurcation in terms of the right to vote. You see some states, mostly blue states, where voting rights are being expanded, where you have automatic voter registration, where you have vote by mail being more prevalent than ever. And then you have other states, and it's mostly red states, that are passing laws to restrict voting in various ways. And then, you know, you have some swing states like Wisconsin, states with divided control, where we actually have not seen any meaningful legislation passed in the last couple of years. But, you know, as you indicated at the beginning, depending on the outcome of the races this fall, we may see more movement come 2023.
We're talking to Rob Yablon, professor of law, director of the State Democracy Research Initiative, looking at what's at stake for election laws in this year's midterms in Wisconsin and around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Is there a change on the table that Republicans have proposed in Wisconsin that you want to see become law? Do you think some of these changes could help clarify how we vote and maybe keep us from ending up in the courts on so many things? What do you hope to see? What do you worry about? What questions do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Rob Yablon, Associate Professor of Law and Director of the State Democracy Research Initiative at UW-Madison, looking at how election laws could change depending on the outcome of the midterm elections. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Nathan is with us in Milwaukee. Nathan, hi.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. One change that I would possibly look forward to is bringing back the GAB, or Government Accountability Board, only this time in order to get rid of it, require a referendum by the voters in order to do so, so that the people it's looking after actually have a say on if it stays or goes. In this moment, though, I think the bipartisan board is probably the best that we can get, so that it keeps both parties from not only running roughshod over the other voters, but everybody else who's not a party member. And I did find it concerning that Michaels, when he was talking about in the debate, said the legislature represents the people, when the problem is it should, but doesn't really do that now. And I, as a voter, would want my vote to be respected. I'm one of the hundreds of thousands of people who they wanted my ballot thrown out after the 2020 election because it was by mail. And the lawyer that argued to have that happen has been hired by Ron Johnson. So I would not be surprised if some ridiculous efforts pop up again.
Nathan, thanks for the call. First of all, the Government Accountability Board, the predecessor of our current election commission, Rob, made up mainly of retired judges, as I recall. Was that a better model, do you think, than what we have now?
You know, there were a lot of folks who study election administration that thought that the Government Accountability Board was, you know, one of the best election administrative agencies in the country. It was politically insulated, pretty nonpartisan. And so we shifted from that in 2016 to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which at least is bipartisan. But because you have this 3-3 split, it means that the commission is often deadlocked and can't issue decisions on things where local clerks, for example, would really like to have some guidance. And so, you know, we've seen, I think, what a lot of election people who study election administration would see as a backward shift. We've gone from a nonpartisan administrative body to a bipartisan body, and now there are proposals to really make election administration a partisan activity. And that, you know, when you administer elections, it's normally thought to be a good idea to have guardrails in place to ensure that partisan actors who are self-interested aren't able to wholly control the process. But that does seem to be the direction that we're moving.
Thanks for the call, Nathan. Dave joins us on the road. Dave, hi.
Yes, hi. I was calling because if I understood Rob right, he was stating that the legislative moves to change election laws have been the result of partisan interests. I was wondering if the legislature has actually held any open public hearings on these proposed changes before they adopt these laws that tend to get vetoed by Governor Evers, because right now he seems to be the only safeguard that we have.
Dave, thanks for the call. Rob, public input on these proposed changes, how much do we tend to see?
You know, we see some, and you know, what the legislature will say is that, you know, they won't say that they're doing this for partisan reasons, but they'll say that they have real concerns about fraud, that they want to ensure election integrity, and that those are their motivations. You know, I think if you talk to a lot of the experts that study this and you look at the actual proposals that they're making, especially when it comes to election administration, you see that these are proposals that are removing rather than adding guardrails to the system.
Dave, thanks for the call. Martha joins us now in Rhinelander. Martha, hi.
Hi. I'd like to know what the gentleman thinks of getting rid of the Electoral College, the pros and cons. I personally think if we have one person, one vote, there'd be a lot less corruptible steps. But what does the gentleman think?
Martha, thanks for the call. And there is, Rob, an active effort in some states, a National Popular Vote Compact, an effort to get around having to change the Constitution that would, in effect, make the popular vote winner the winner of the presidential race. Your thoughts on pros and cons there?
Well, you know, there is a lot to be said for just having a straightforward national election where the president is the person that gets the most votes nationally. I mean, we think of the president as someone who's supposed to represent the country as the whole. So, you know, in those instances where someone becomes president despite having fewer votes, there is a little bit of an oddity to that. And, you know, having the Electoral College affects the way that presidential campaigns are run in some strange ways. It means that all of the attention tends to get focused on swing states and swing areas. A lot of places in the country largely get ignored during presidential campaigns. And so there is a lot to be said for reforming it. The trick is, how do you do it? A constitutional amendment is obviously a very heavy lift. You mentioned the possibility of this interstate compact. In order for that to kick in, you would essentially need states that represent a majority of the Electoral College to sign on. But there are a lot of states that feel like they're served pretty well by the current system, including swing states like Wisconsin. You know, we are among the states that get more attention than we otherwise might. And so it might be a tough sell to get a state like Wisconsin on board with that kind of reform.
Martha, thanks for that call. Rob, I wanted to ask about the impact of election denial. We've got people still claiming that the 2020 presidential election didn't come out the way that it did. We have some candidates, Republican candidates around the country, not as much I've heard here in Wisconsin, people saying if they lose, it is therefore fraudulent, saying basically broadcasting that they're not going to accept the election results unless they win. How big a deal is that?
It is discouraging that this has persisted now for 2 years since the 2020 election, despite the fact that there have been, you know, dozens of judicial rulings around the country that have rejected claims relating to the 2020 election, despite, you know, multiple reviews. This is probably the most scrutinized presidential election in history, and none of these conspiracy theories have panned out. You know, the fact that nevertheless you see this strand of election denialism is unfortunate. And it's hard to know how this will play out after 2022. You know, it's possible that if the candidates who are the strongest election deniers lose some key races, particularly races that might have been winnable by, say, a more mainstream Republican candidate, that the Republican Party might start to do more to distance itself from election denialism and it could gradually fade. But it's also possible that it goes the other way. I mean, it's sort sort of strange to think about what might happen if some of these candidates win. On one hand, it'll be harder for them to claim that the system is rigged against them if they've prevailed under that system. But at the same time, once they're in office, they're likely to follow through with many of the changes in the law that they've been talking about.
In just our last minute and a half or so, Rob, I mentioned a lot of lawsuits. What are you watching here in Wisconsin, either in terms of voting lawsuits that have been resolved or that might still be in the works?
Right. Well, you know, we have already had a lot of litigation in Wisconsin, more than you'd normally expect to see in a midterm. A lot of this is about absentee voting protocols. There have been lawsuits challenging guidance that the Wisconsin Elections Commission has issued, arguing that it's contrary to Wisconsin statutes. And there have been changes to absentee voting rules that, you know, I think it's a challenging time for local clerks to try to administer the election because some of these rules still seem to be in flux. If the initial count after Election Day in Wisconsin is close, we're very likely to see more election about more litigation about some of these issues and others. You know, in Wisconsin, candidates are entitled to a recount if the margin is less than 1%. And that happens regularly in Wisconsin. It happened in both the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections. It almost happened in the 2018 governor's race. Governor Evers won that race by just 1.1%. And so if we're within that recount margin, I expect that we're going to see some quite aggressive litigation after the election.
Is there a hope, just briefly, Rob, that if we get things resolved in courts now and clarity on how those votes are handled, that might preempt some of that?
You know, it is possible to some extent, but there are still issues that look like they're not going to be fully resolved when it comes to absentee ballot rules. For example, there are likely to still be some lingering disputes about what happens if there are some imperfections on an absentee ballot witness certification where the address is mostly filled out but not completely filled out. There still, unfortunately, is going to be plenty that could be litigated after the election.
Rob, thanks again for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
That's Robert Yablon, Associate Professor of Law and Co-Director of the State Democracy Research Initiative at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about how election laws became a big issue in this year's midterm elections. Still time for you to join in with your questions. If there's something else you want to know about elections, we can maybe tackle them in a future show or pass them along to the news team. Email ideas@WPR.org.